Sure enough, it's Friday. Extra podcast day. I normally get it out late Thursday or early Friday morning. Didn't make either of those deadlines today. A lot on my plate. Had to finish the London Walks March newsletter and send it on its way to its 3,000-plus subscribers. We're pleased as punch that something we started just 4 months ago now has over 3,000 takers. And of course, this is the final weekend before they close the polls and start counting the votes in the nationwide Tourism Superstar 2022 competition. And as a lot of you will have heard, we've been overtaken. We're now in second place, and we're determined not to come in second. It's not just a matter of determination, it's what's right. Those five guides and the city they represent deserve to win the thing. So we've been flat out here trying to rustle up a few more votes to get us home. Not just win the thing, but win it going away. So come on, London. Come on, Londoners. Come on, everybody who loves this city. Vote for us. Get us home. The link that will take you to the polling station is right there, front and center on the homepage of this website, www.walks.com. And speaking of tourism superstars, so far we've heard from Adam and Karen and Fiona and Simon, but not yet from the fifth member of the team, Russell. So here he is in this podcast, Superstar Guide Russell. It's a short clip from his virtual tour of the New River, which in turn was one of the episodes the five superstars did in their eight-part Liquid London virtual tour series. The extract is from near the beginning of the tour. Russell is paddling through an overview history of watery London. Here's Russell.
But essentially, how do you provide drinking water to the people of London? Well, you've basically got three options. There's rain, there's rivers, and there's well. So rain, well, you can just harvest it. The river, well, the water in the River Thames, for much of its part, is seawater. And so it would need to be treated, boiled, things like that, and well. And if we go back to sort of Roman, there were well. This image on the left is a drawing, and on the right is a model that was built from the drawing. Because about 20 years or so ago, MOLAS, the Museum of London Archaeological Service, discovered a Roman wrought iron water wheel built around about AD 100. So that's the period between the Boudiccan Revolt, so a time when London was being rebuilt in the aftermath of that destructive event, and the visit of Emperor Hadrian in AD 120. So a lot of building work going. And this wrought iron water wheel brought water up. And you can see you turn the wheel, basically a slave or a few slaves or an animal will be used to turn the wheel, and it turns that larger wheel, bringing those buckets of water up to about 5 meters, about 15 feet below the ground. And when they built this model, they realized it could bring up about 270,000 liters of water a day up from this well, fresh water. So a pretty decent system. And by the time we get to the Middle Ages, well, here is one of these lovely maps again of the lost rivers of London we've heard so much about over the last few weeks. Now, the one on the left, the River Tyburn, that I talked about quite a few weeks ago that little stream was very good for taking fresh water into Westminster, where the king had his royal palace, but it's nowhere near the city of London. The River Fleet, which Karen's going to be talking about next week, brought water in, but by the time we get into the Middle Ages, already it was starting to get quite polluted, raw sewage, animal waste, runoffs from businesses that are producing lots of waste, tanneries using urine, things like this. And so by the time we get to the sort of Middle Ages proper, 10, 11 into 1200, it's becoming clear that a better system than just taking the water from the rivers and wells is going to be needed to provide water to this developing city. And a conduit was built. This is an image of Cheapside. I think from this image, this drawing, a little bit later, or maybe the 1500s, this image. But back in the year 1236, so really quite early on, a conduit was built to bring water from the Tiber out to the west, traveling by gravity down into the city of London, where there was a system to collect water on Cheapside. Because it was gravity, it did mean that the flow was not very strong, and sometimes it didn't even run at all. And there were leaks in the pipes a lot, so the water pressure wasn't great. But it was much better than what had existed before. Citizens could drink from the conduits for free, but merchants had to pay for access to the water. And there were wardens that were paid for by general taxation. And what they did was, well, they had lots of roles, mainly to look after the conduit itself, you know, maintain it, plug leaks, things like that. They also had a job in levying the rate on the business users who were taking the water. And they also had to keep an eye out for unscrupulous business people who would try to steal water from the conduit. And I came across a court case in the 1330s where a brewery was fined stealing water from the Cheapside conduit. There were also water carriers. So what people would do, they would have a yoke around their neck with two buckets on it. They would take water from the conduit and then come to your house and sell you pails of fresh water to save you having to go down to the conduit. And if you had lots of money, if you had a grand house, you could actually pay a supplement to have a private supply of water into your house. So that's how people are getting water in the 1200s, mainly. Famously, in 1273, for the coronation of Edward I, it is said that the conduit in Cheapside ran with wine, not water, to celebrate that great coronation. Now, as is often the way in the story of London, we've come across this man so often in the past, the great hero of the age, Richard Whittington, a Lord Mayor of London, Dick Whittington, as he's sometimes referred to. He did an awful lot to help with public hygiene, public health, public sanitation in medieval London. He paid for a cistern in Cornhill and two others, one on Bishopsgate, one on Cripplegate. And these had supplies from various springs, and this was pumped into these cisterns to provide a supply of potable or drinkable water. And he also endowed what was known as Whittington's Longhouse. Two rooms, one for men, one for women. And in each room, down each side of the wall, are 16 seats. So 32 spaces for men, 32 spaces for women, 64 spaces in total. And these public toilets deposited waste into a gully, which was washed into the Thames, which didn't do an awful lot for the cleanliness of the river, but it did an awful lot actually for the cleanliness of the city. So Richard Whittington really helped in that. Here's what's known as the Agas map from, I think, the 1560s. And you can see in this image a densely packed city with the wall still intact around it. And you can see top left of this image the area around Clerkenwell, the Clerk's Well, another supply of fresh water. And sort of Smithfield, there's quite a lot of development there. There's development up on the right-hand side going straight out north of the city, where sort of Spitalfields, Shoreditch is. That's quite developed. But apart from that, north of the city, lots of open space. And we're going to come to Islington in a little bit. Things develop in the 1430s. We get a supply of water from Paddington. 200 tons of lead are used to create pipes. And in 1476, I came across a chap called William Campion, who was convicted of tapping the water supply. He was stealing water from the conduit. And they created a really quite apt punishment for this fella. He was basically paraded through the streets of the City of London on horseback. And there were two huge buckets that were attached to him. One at the front, one at the back. And these buckets had holes in them. And as he was paraded through the streets, people were pouring water into these buckets and pouring out of these holes and drenching this man in sort of humiliating way of punishing.